Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Chiefs are down 25-23 at 3 seconds to go in the game. It's the Bengals and the Chiefs. Why would you think it would be anything different than this? A 51-yarder officially to try to win it by Butker. 25-23 Cincinnati. Placement is down. Butker's kick. Leg through. It is high enough, and it is good! Kansas City! Harrison Butker, another clutch kick against the Bengals, and the Chiefs win it at the buzzer, 26-25, and the Chiefs go to 2-0 on the year.
Mitch Holthus on the call right here on 96.5, The Fan. Of course, the game-winning kick from Harrison Butker, Mr. Automatic. I mean, nobody even was questioning. The minute that kick was about to happen, I think we all would have been more stunned than anything if it didn't go in. That's such a luxury in the NFL to have.
Yeah,
that
I'd
we
say
expect
so.
Those. 51, 53, or maybe it's going to be a 57. It doesn't matter.
Were you sweating
matter.
The kick very much?
No. No, it was the 4th and 16 I was sweating, you know? We're going to talk all about that. Hope everybody had a fantastic weekend. It's good to be here on a Victory Monday. Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, and our producer, Drew Nixon. Video stream is up as well. Drew's wearing a Joe Burrow jersey today, the day after a loss from his team.
Yeah, supporting his guys.
He definitely is, and he'll support him even more now with a bleach blonde haircut coming up at some point later this week. I have a phone number of a downtown salon, a nice couple that owns a salon. They volunteered to come in studio at some point this week and dye your hair blonde and get you the Burrow cut and everything.
In studio? So we need somebody to run the board for just a brief period of time?
That's right. That's right. So that's going to happen, I think, this week. I need to reach out and confirm some things. But yes, it was a great NFL Sunday. And let's be honest, the Chiefs are just inevitable at this point. Are they not? They had no business winning. Three turnovers, a swinging door at left tackle at times with the rookie Kingsley Suamataia getting benched. They didn't even have 300 yards of offense. Patrick Mahomes for a full game in his career, that was the lowest passing yards. He had another where he didn't play a full game and had a little bit less. But that was basically the lowest passing total in the Mahomes era. They, of course, get the 4th and 16 conversion via a clear defensive pass interference that set up ultimately the kick that you just heard, but yet they found a way to win. I know it's very cliche, Cody, to be like, well, great teams find ways to win, but that is what happened yesterday. It is cliche, but it happened.
Yes, they shouldn't have won that game. They played a bad game. They were down on turnovers by -2. We can point out these stats a million times. I always have to look them up again. If you were -3 in the turnover differential, which they were at one point in that game, you lose the game 90.7% of the time. If you were -2 in the turnover differential, you lose the game 83% of the time in the NFL. So just putting the win. Now, look, do I think the Chiefs win probability when -2 in the turnovers is 17%? I do not, because they're the Kansas City Chiefs. And even against a team that you and I weren't writing off as dead just because they lost an embarrassing game to the Patriots, we knew that they typically are tough on the Chiefs. The Chiefs, here's the thing. This entire game was a lot about what they did for the first three quarters. Patrick Mahomes not seeing an underneath linebacker and making the mistake. Penalties and Kingsley Suamataia getting his ass kicked. And like some things that they absolutely did wrong and couldn't move the ball outside of those first few drives. But at the end, I think the thing that we missed before we talk about, I'm sure, the defensive pass interference call, which outside of Kansas City, we're going to sound like homers, I guess, in saying that you're not allowed to run into the back of a wide receiver while he attempts to make a catch. The Bengals should be getting far more grief for shooting themselves in the foot. They got the ball back. Joe Burrow immediately fumbles it. The next drive fumbles it with a chance to go up 2 scores, return for a touchdown. And then when they had a chance to ice the game, as in just get a second first down, get a third first down, what'd they do? They punted the ball. Back to Patrick Mahomes with 2.5 minutes to play. a generally bad thing to happen to your team if you're trying to win the game. They had plenty of chances, and then, in the most critical moment, committed a pass interference penalty on Rashee Rice when the game was over. So they shot themselves in the foot too. That's why the Chiefs get to win instead.
Right. Look, Burrow, if you just box score watch and everything, yeah, Joe Burrow had the more impressive numbers overall, had the better day, but you did lay out there was multiple chances in the fourth quarter where they got the ball and a chance to kind of put the Chiefs away. They were not able to do it. Burrow, the biggest play of the game was a mistake by Joe Burrow. And so that ultimately was a huge deciding factor. The Jamari Connor sack, and then, of course, the Jamari Connor forced fumble by Mike Dana that's picked up by him for a touchdown. So it's weird because if you didn't watch the game and you box score watch, like, Joe Burrow, of course, had a more impressive day. But the most impactful plays of the game was a mistake by Joe Burrow that led to a touchdown directly. Three turnover. You lose the turnover margin, but you actually got a touchdown directly off of said turnover. Yes. And that's the difference in the game. Why the Chiefs ultimately win. Why the Chiefs are sitting here at 2-0 in a great spot. We'll talk about some of the concerns that we have, including, unfortunately, the Pacheco injury here in the next couple of minutes. We'll get there. You'll hear what Ian Rappaport is now saying. It doesn't look good for Pacheco, and how do the Chiefs move forward? Plus, we'll talk about Kingsley. There's some of the reality of, hey, there's some issues here. No, they're not a perfect team. But to get to week three, knowing that they have some mistakes that continue to come up, knowing that Mahomes did not play all that well, and yet you've beaten, let's not forget when the schedule came out, we were like, man, that's a pretty tough 1-2. I know they're at home, but tough 1-2. You beat Baltimore, you beat Cincy, they're both 0-2. They both are your challengers to go with Buffalo and Houston in the AFC. And now, really, it's just Buffalo and Houston that you're battling for the number one seed with. That's it. It's those two teams. It's Buffalo
and
Houston.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably accurate.
Anybody, nobody else, Cody. It's Buffalo and Houston.
I mean, 0-2 teams historically, which I'm sure we'll get into later in the week, they only make the postseason 9.3% of the time. 40 out of the last 420 NFL teams since the merger in 1970 have made the postseason after starting 0-2. So pretty low rate, like one a year, roughly, actually less than that. One a year or one every year and a half managed to do it. So yes, for the one seed conversation, which we talked about going into it, if you beat Cincinnati, you eliminate them from that conversation, and they don't get to be a part of the number one seed chat anymore.
The one thing also going into the game, we talked about on Friday, it felt different because this was a September game, also just how Cincy looked against New England. But now we know more than ever, it clearly doesn't matter that these two teams, every single game really is going to be
a dogfight battle.
A dogfight and go down the wire. Thought this one could have been different. It wasn't. It was the same thing, right? Two teams that went down to the final play, literally, and this one a kick. But usually the final possession, another margin of victory by 3 points or less. This one was by 1 point. I mean, it literally doesn't get any closer.
On a last second field goal.
Yeah. I mean, it's remarkable how close these games continue to be, even though this time around it was in the month of September. So the same story.
Yeah. No, I would say, again, it just feels like this is what happens with really good football teams. But also, this is what highly competitive games against teams who have been highly competitive looks like. I don't think it's an accident that the Chiefs have won 8 straight games. And you might be like, wow, 8 straight? That's in any season, in any over 2 seasons. I don't care how you spread it out. That's an impressive feat. But when you factor in addition to that, that it is 4 of those wins had to come against playoff teams. And some of the more difficult playoff teams that we would agree, including Baltimore and Cincinnati, who they just beat again. So 2 wins each against Baltimore and Cincinnati. A win against the 49ers in the playoffs. A win against Miami. Like, when you start stacking up their wins over this most recent stretch, they've beaten pretty much every good team in the league. They beat the Bills again. Every good team in the league. They've managed to knock out on their way to a Super Bowl, and now a 2-0 start over the course of this. And so they are the best team in the league for a reason. And in a game yesterday that I would say 99% of the time, they have no business winning. None. You had no offense. Your defense got picked on a little bit. You turned the ball over a bunch. I mean, and how many games do you win that you turn it over 3 times in general? Let alone what the ratio is. You can't turn the ball over 3 times and win, and yet They did.
You make just one more play. And in this case, the only reason why it ended up being okay to lose the turnover margin was because the one turnover you got there resulted in a touchdown directly from Jamari Connor. And that's what was so massive. You guys can interact with us throughout the show. How are you feeling on a Monday after beating Cincinnati? 913-586-7965. I see a lot of you have already greeted Drew this morning.
Uh-huh.
I think Drew has responded.
A lot of people asking for Drew to be on camera on the YouTube and Twitch channel.
We should put Drew on camera, but also, I mean, Drew has already responded to 8 texts going back with people. We're only 10 minutes into the show.
A lot of people are saying a good game.
They are.
It was a very good game.
It was a good game.
As you would expect.
It was a very good game. Yeah. Drew, the vibes were good at Arrowhead. I know you were worried about that. The vibes were, I can promise you, they were very, very good.
Yeah, I was not there, but the vibes seemed to be great. It sounded great from TV. It sounded like it was a very intense game. Had fans on their toes a little bit. Yeah, it was good.
We'll get to some of the Bengals' antics in the locker room, including their star player hurting their team late. Who could have predicted that? And the consequences for you here in about 20 minutes or so.
There's a couple.
The only thing that...
Not a tattoo, though, now.
Yeah, the tattoo, you luckily got out of that on Friday. We'll get
credit
there.
To Barber for
yeah,
that.
Sean Barber's
Don't blame
wife.
Me.
Sean Barber's wife saved you on that one. Definitely did. The only thing killing the vibe a little bit would be what looks like a very serious injury for Isaiah Pacheco. We know he left the game late after having a 90-plus yard performance. In the locker room, at that point in time, we didn't know the full severity. Andy had said it was an ankle injury, but down there, it was clear it wasn't just something that's going to keep him out for a short period of time. He was extremely emotional in the locker room. He kind of had a towel over his face. You could tell he had been, crying a little bit. Andy Reid, before going to the podium, was over there kind of embracing Pacheco. You also had, the team trainer going over and telling some other players, and then they went over to Pacheco. That's when that's a sign this is not just a two-week, three-week thing.
Yeah, sure.
And now
it's a serious injury.
We get more information from Ian Rappaport.
Isaiah Pacheco, sources say, fractured his fibula in yesterday's Chiefs win over the Cincinnati Bengals. This was kind of the fear leaving the stadium. He was in a walking boot. He was in crutches. Anytime they're going to take a look at the bone, usually that's not good. This is why. Initial test showed a fractured fibula. Now, my understanding is he's going to have more tests today to determine if there is associated damage. In other words, if there is damage to the ligaments, what needs to happen next and how long he is going to be out. But it is a fracture, and generally those are 4, 6 weeks, maybe 8 weeks. Don't be surprised if Isaiah Pacheco is placed on injured reserve. And for the Kansas City Chiefs, they do have some options at running back, some we saw on the field yesterday. They do also have Jerick McKinnon, who's played for them the last couple of years, who is a free agent. There are certainly some options, but they are 2-0, and they have now lost Hollywood Brown for the foreseeable future and Isaiah Pacheco to a fractured fibula.
That's what's, I know we've looked at the wide receiver room, and we said when Hollywood Brown was out, we're like, hey, they're going to be fine, and I do think they're going to be fine, but that means the wide receiver room, with the exception of Xavier Worthy, is not much different, honestly. Than a year ago. I know Tony's not there, but otherwise now it's really like as far as available players. And then in the running back situation, Isaiah Pacheco has turned himself into, I'll call him a top 12 back.
Yeah.
I think he's like 12.
I honestly think it's probably more like 8 or 9, but it depends. Whatever.
Sure. Fine. I mean, top 8, top 12, either one.
No one's going to argue top 12.
Yeah, either way. And now we know the energy he brings to the team. He also had a really good game yesterday. They needed it. They should have run the ball even more, actually. We talked about on Friday with Drew about the Bengals' rush defense, and it showed at times yesterday. This sucks, man. This really sucks to see for Isaiah Pacheco, because I don't think this is only a four-week thing. This seems like it's going to be long-term, and maybe late in the year he's back, but that's about it. And so the question, of course, is what do you do from here? We know in terms of who's actually on the roster – available for next week,
Carson Steele. Yeah.
And Samaje Perine. And then Prince on the practice squad. That's who's
He's
available.
Not even on the Chiefs practice squad right now. He'd have to go get picked up off of somebody else's practice squad.
I believe that's right. And so Clyde is on the NFI list. He's not eligible to come off till week 5. We all know the background there. Who knows if he's available in week 5? Who knows if he's available throughout the season? So they're for this particular week, I think going to the Falcons game on Sunday night, I mean, it's going to be Carson Steele and Samaje Perine.
I don't think that they have much of a choice. First, I do feel terrible for Pacheco. This is unfortunately the life of an NFL running back, because it stinks. You could be one of the best backs in the league, which he was, on one of the best offenses in the league, which he's certainly been a part of. You can have a great game. And because you play a physical position where 78 people are always trying to tackle you, you're always one half step away from a devastating injury. Look at Christian McCaffrey, already hurt. Had a great year, right? Healthy the whole time. Hurt, right? Saquon Barkley's missed multiple years.
Yeah, McCaffrey's an offseason thing. Had nothing to do with playing. He didn't even play at all this year yet.
Sure, but offseason thing because of how much weight is on his legs during different times. It doesn't matter. Achilles tendonitis builds up over time because he's a running back and because he's missed other seasons. And so Saquon Barkley, lots of great backs miss seasons. The question whether or not he can bounce back from this is very serious. I'll tell you my plan. My plan at running back would be relatively simple. I would, for the next 2 weeks, against the Atlanta Falcons and the Los Angeles Chargers, I think, of the next two, I would start Carson Steele, and Samaje Perine would be my third down back, which he has primarily been anyway. He had the most snaps at third down yesterday anyway, even with Isaiah Pacheco having a good game, and I'd do that for 2 weeks, and during those 2 weeks, I'd try to get a sense of where Clyde is. I try to get a sense on if he feels comfortable, is comfortable, thinks he'll be more available to the team the rest of the season while he continues to recover from PTSD symptoms. And if he is, that would be my plan. It would be Carson Steele and Carson Steele and Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Samaje Perine for the rest of the 2024 season. If Clyde is not available or the team does not feel that he can be counted on, well, then I think you got to start looking at practice squad players. I think you have to start looking at, I don't know, the aging ass bodies on like other NFL rosters that are floating around there, like, you know, how the Cowboys signed Ezekiel Elliott. And you got to start looking that route instead.
So your plan for the next couple weeks, I think that's like kind of their only option for the time being, which is roll with Steele and Perine and then see in week five when Clyde's eligible even to come off the NFI list and if he's available there. I mean, I think that is their only option for the short term. And then we've seen in the regular season, there usually is a team. Last year, there was it was Cam Akers, I think it was, for the Rams, and then ultimately he's now on the Texans. But there's usually a back that some younger player has, you know, taken his job basically midseason. Yep. That's either available for a late round pick or somebody just flat out cuts somebody. I think that's the type of move. Yeah, McKinnon's out there. I mean, my thing with the free agent options out there is always they're free agents for a reason too at this point. I mean, hell, Dalvin Cook got signed before some of these other guys. Mm-hmm. And you know what I mean? So
Ezekiel is pretty much a starter in Dallas somehow.
He is. Yeah. Melvin Gordon is out there. Kareem Hunt is out there. That's the name that I've seen on the text line. I saw it on Twitter. I understand why his name comes to the forefront of this conversation. Let me just point out, he's 29 years old now. This is not Kareem Hunt from 2017.
Which might as well be 61 at running back.
He's 29. He's coming off a season in which he had his lowest yards per carry in his career, 3 yards per carry. Now, he did have 9 touchdowns for the Browns a year ago, but he's also a free agent. And I remind myself anytime we have these conversations, like, hey, no other team wanted to sign him. So
sure.
I also think the background on that, we all are well aware of the history there. The owner of this team back then
buried him.
We can play the audio again from 2019, 18, whatever that was. I don't believe that is a door they are willing to open again.
So there's I kick the tires on it. And, you know, we've been doing the show for 5 years. People brought his name up a million times. Have I ever once tell you that I'd even kick the tires on it? No, I've been a flat no. Across the board, your point is valid on the fact that nobody wants to sign him, but that's the whole problem with who you'd be going after anyway. Derek Prince is technically signed, but Kareem Hunt wasn't going to sign to be on the Miami Dolphins practice squad, because if he was, maybe he'd be there instead. And so the running backs you would be targeting off of other teams aren't really on teams either, right? They're free agent running backs or they're guys on practice squads.
Yeah, but
they
don't have the baggage of a guy that you kicked off your team for lying to the owner in the front office and the head coach.
The one thing I'll say is the reason,
not to mention the video of kicking somebody.
Oh, it's all that's bad. And now obviously he's been in the league, so people have not let it go, but like they're willing to put him on their team for that. It's different because it's the Chiefs. I understand. But I'll say even 3 years ago when his name was getting brought up by Chiefs fans, or 2 years ago when his name was getting brought up by Chiefs fans, they can kind of absorb anything they want right now. They are effectively bulletproof. Like whether, and I don't know that they should think about their HR policy that way or the public thought or good of their team that way. But I'm just telling you right now, when you are the back-to-back Super Bowl champions and you got the good old boy Patrick Mahomes leading the way, you can absorb almost any PR hit. So like the PR thing should be the least of your concerns at the moment, having to have Clark Hunt go back, because that's as simple as quote as Andy being like, people should have a chance to grow, and I believe in second chances, and that was a million years ago, and we welcome Kareem Hunt with open arms. My bigger concern is he just flat out washed? He averaged 3 yards a carry last year, and he's a damn near 30-year-old running back. Those aren't the guys I am actively trying to sign very often. Just because I borderline would almost rather just find a 23-year-old on a practice squad, because running backs can be found anywhere. For all I know, Carson Steele's got it. He had a couple of nice runs. Fumble hurt. Fumble didn't make me feel good. Kareem Hunt also fumbled on his first snap before having a productive few years in Kansas City before he got released. So, whatever.
Yeah, the one thing that you have with Andy Reid and this front office and this coaching staff, they have multiple times, whether we're talking the offensive line, which plays a role in this, of course, as well, they have shown they've been able to find talent, undrafted guys, late round picks. And in this case, we're probably talking about finding undrafted guys or somebody that is a veteran free agent that's out there, if in fact that's the path they go down, and finding success. I mean, whether it's their run scheme, whether it's just how they go about their business in evaluating talent. Isaiah Pacheco, nobody thought he was going to be a top 12 back in the NFL when they drafted him in the seventh round.
Nope.
And here we are. Now it's unfortunately that he got hurt. We know that Damian Williams was the running back for this team when they won the first Super Bowl part of this dynasty. Damian Williams wasn't somebody that everybody thought
highly of. He had 500 rushing that year.
Yeah. I mean, so this regime has shown that they can make this work. I don't think anybody should be panicking. I think it's something to watch over the next 2 weeks. A lot of it's going to be dictated on what does Carson Steele look like? Let's just be honest. Because Samaje Perine is not really like, he's not someone you're handing the ball off to a ton. He is what McKinnon kind of was. And so for those that want them to bring back McKinnon, I guess, but I think Perine kind of fills that void already. Perine is more of the receiving back. He had the fourth most receiving yards of any running back a year ago.
McKinnon's
in the
not
NFL.
An every down back, which is what they actually
need.
Kareem Hunt's a better fit schematically
Correct.
Than Jerick McKinnon.
Right.
And they're both not signed if you're just saying they're on the street, nobody wants them department.
If they had not already brought Perine to the organization and then this happened, then I think the McKinnon thing would make more sense. But I don't believe that. Whereas, you know, Carson Steele, let's see what he can do for a week or so and give him an opportunity. He doesn't strike me as someone that is going to make it through a full season, though, if he's getting 90% of your touches as far as out of the backfield. So at some point, I think they will have to have another answer. And maybe we get surprising news later today. Andy's going to speak exclusively here on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan at noon. Maybe we'll find out that it's not going to be 12 weeks and it's going to be 8 weeks. I don't know, but I think he should be prepared that this could be a 12-week injury for Pacheco.
Drew, can you just answer me one question before we get to more with you at 10:30? This is actually going to be a really good test for Drew, because this will decide at 10:30 whether he's living in reality or not. Do you think it was pass interference on 4th and 16?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It was a
saved yourself on that one, man. That could have gone. No. You go the other way on that, and then we got to really have
a long day
of coping.
For the people who say he was going for the ball, yes, but you can't go through somebody to get to the ball. It was badly timed. It was an obvious PI, and unfortunately, it cost him the game.
Yeah, it was a very clear defensive pass interference. If not, Rice, I think, probably catches the ball anyway.
If he times it right, it would be a great catch. If Rasheed caught the ball, it would be, while getting hit timely, it would have been a great catch.
I firmly disagree with the Bengals fans who are coping in my Twitter mentions this morning, claiming that it was a Hail Mary attempt and it should be treated differently. Hail Mary? He scrambled and he's throwing directly at one open wide receiver.
Yeah, he didn't just
in
lob
what
it
universe is that a Hail Mary attempt? Yeah. Patrick Mahomes has completed more passes of 16 yards or more than anyone else in the NFL since 2018. And I guarantee you, without even looking it up, on 3rd and 4th down to save a game, especially more. There were two passes last year on 4th and 25 each that he hit a wide receiver in the hands that did not get converted. He goes for a target. This is not an accident. He's not just throwing up a prayer. He's throwing it at a man. He's throwing it at Rashee Rice, who eventually got pass interfered with. I never understand this idea that, like, he was just throwing it up.
I was a little bit surprised that Lou Anarumo didn't go ahead and blitz Mahomes in that respect, because Henderson had done good enough. It's 4th and 16. That's a lot of yards to get in one play. If you make him scramble a little bit, I mean, he was forced out of the pocket, but he still had enough time where Mahomes could set and throw. A little bit surprised there that they weren't aggressive on defense, but hey, it is what it is.
Feels like everyone should try to find some way to copy Lou's plan against the Chiefs, that's for sure.
Yeah, somehow he just continues to have the... I'm sure that in meetings over the course of the week, though, he really got into, because there were not many missed tackles.
How disheartening is that, though? I mean, like, I hear what we're saying. We're like, man, Lou Anarumo, he's got a better plan than anybody in the league against Mahomes. I think that's a fair statement to make. I'm not disagreeing.
I don't know how
but
he does
lost
it,
but... three in a row to Patrick Mahomes with apparently the defensive coordinator puts together the best plan. Like, that speaks to how, that's not even a shot at him. I'm saying that's how ridiculous the Chiefs have been and why they're inevitable, as we started the show saying, and why Mahomes, even in a day in which statistically it was not a good day at the office, yet the great master plan, nobody's ever done it before, yet Mahomes just won the game.
Sure,
still.
Sure, but I don't...
Like,
I don't,
that's amazing to me. Like, on one hand, we're saying, man, what an amazing plan. Nobody has done this against him and the Chiefs, and yet they have lost three freaking games
they
in a row.
They haven't beaten them in two
honest,
and
though,
a half years. Almost 3 years.
How many people would say that Mahomes is the reason they won this game, though, because if you look at the biggest sequence of the game, Mahomes throws the pick. Mahomes technically threw three picks, but
sure,
one of them was taken back.
I 100% with you, but they still lost the game, though.
I don't think you can say Mahomes is... Mahomes gets the win, but I don't know if this is... almost like the Caleb Williams effect last week. Caleb Williams did not win the game for the Bears. Didn't win the game for the Chiefs
But let's not act like Caleb Williams' week one performance was anywhere near what Mahomes still gave them
yesterday. But I'm saying from the standpoint of what won them the game, Harrison Butker's kick, the defense, timely. The biggest sequence of the game was the interception by Cam Taylor-Britt, as you mentioned, Cody, and then the fumble by Joe Burrow right afterwards, where they could have gone and almost buried the game there. But defensively, they did a great job of bending but not breaking in the red zone in particular. They only held the Bengals to one touchdown, I think, in the red zone.
I hear you, Drew. All I am saying is, like, I think
they
pulled through. I'm just saying, if we're going to make such a big deal about how great Lou Anarumo was, sure, I'm just saying that as great as he was and he has been against Mahomes, they still are 0-3 in the last masterclass defensive performances I'm told they've had.
Well, sure. I mean, in terms of what Lou Anarumo has brought to the table, he's the only one that has flustered Mahomes as much as he has. Nobody, even though the Bills have played in close games, even though the Ravens have played in close games, Lou Anarumo's the only one, not Mike McDonald, not whoever, to be able to do that. I think that's why he gets the praise.
He gets the praise. I'm just saying, like...
I mean, technically, it doesn't matter, I guess.
That's why the Chiefs are inevitable. Mahomes, we agree, was not great yesterday. They put together a good plan, and yet the Chiefs still won the game.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Is like, I can't imagine how disheartening and
That's why Joe Burrow called it one of the worst losses, maybe the worst loss he's ever felt.
They did everything right, pretty much, except for two costly errors. Or three, technically, because they missed extra point.
Oh, we'll talk about another error from the star wide receiver of Cincinnati. We got to discuss what happened there. I was also in the locker room. We talked to Trent McDuffie about that sequence. I thought Chiefs fans will like McDuffie's comments about Ja'Marr Chase.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That's coming up next.
Cincinnati 3 of 9 on third down. They have 3rd and 10 here. Joe Burrow at his own 34-yard line. Burrow takes the shotgun snap, pressured up the middle, and they're going to grab him and pull him down. As Mike Dannon and Tershawn Moore, now the ball's out. They say this is live. It's picked up by Shamari Connor. He goes to the 10-5. Touchdown, Kansas City.
Biggest play of the game. Shamari Connor picks up the fumble from Joe Burrow. The Chiefs, of course, go on to win. At the time, we knew it was a massive play. It became even bigger as we saw the fourth quarter and some of the offensive struggles continue. But how about he played great yesterday? Not only the fumble recovery, but he was shot out of a damn cannon on the sack when Spags brought the blitz. We know
at the most important time
over the last 2 years, basically McDuffie's been in that spot before where they've brought him on blitz. Snead did it all the time, and now I think we're starting to learn more and more that that's going to be something they use with Connor quite a bit. Based on his athleticism, Spags dialed up the blitz at the right time, and he came through with a big sack late in that game.
Yeah, it was massive. Connor, Chanel, this goes back to the Brett Veach Spags part of it, too, where I think they deserve kind of equal credit. Veach for finding the talent, Spags for constantly working with literally any talent that exists inside of there. So, I mean, it's continued to work. It's really hard to argue with the results they get out of pretty much every secondary player. Like, their problem right now is tight ends, which you can get to.
Mm-hmm.
But the secondary is not falling apart. Joshua Williams had kind of a rough, I would say more goal line day than just anywhere on the field. Because, again, Cincinnati still finished in the low 20s in points, and the Chiefs set them up in field position twice on the plus side of the ball. I mean, they were disadvantageous spots. And yeah, Josevic had a couple of touchdowns down there and made a couple of, I mean, one spectacular catch on the sideline, was really open on the second.
Yep.
But I mean, he won like a, you know, they didn't run away with it in the secondary.
No, they were able to hold Jamar Chase in check, and he had a chance though to have a big time conversion, or at least a big time play to set up what could have been a drive to ice the game against Kansas City. And we know he gets a completion. He was clearly frustrated immediately with Trent McDuffie. Went back and looked at the play multiple times. Like, did he think there was a face mask? No, there was no face mask. Did he think it was a horse collar? There was no horse collar. And yet he got
hip drop. Went really hip drop.
Was barking at the official. Joe Burrow tried to calm him down a little too late because the official throws the flag. And then Joe Burrow kind of had to shove Jamar Chase back as Jamar lost his temper there and ended up, you know, I don't want to say flat out cost his team the game, but man, it was close because
that could have been a first down that led to a touchdown instead of they had to set up for the field goal.
Correct. It was a huge swing in the game for one of your star players to make a mistake like that. And then Trent McDuffie in the locker room, he was asked about that sequence. First, he's like, hey, do you know what he was upset about? And he said, I have no clue. But then he elaborated. And I think this is the most, like, Trent McDuffie, this is the most you'll ever hear him kind of talk towards a player, but in his own way. Listen to how he said they approached playing Jamar Chase.
I mean, we know what he's about, you know, and I think on the defensive side, we just, not to say get in his head, but do our job to a point where you mess him up, you know, so not having to say anything, not have to do anything extra, just not allowing him to catch the ball. I mean, as a receiver, that's frustrating. I get it. You know, if I'm a DB and they're catching the ball on me all the time, I'm going to be upset too. So just not getting him the ball, I feel like, is the biggest thing for us to gain his hit.
He was clearly frustrated, to say the least. Four catches, 35 yards. That was the day for Jamar Chase. And frustration is one thing, but man, what a costly mistake for your team to have that. Like, that just can't happen for one of your best players, one of the best players in the league. And for him to do that, McDuffie, at that point, like, I thought maybe he thought there was a penalty that should have been called. That wasn't even, I don't know what I honestly don't know what he was yelling at the official.
I don't
for.
Have any idea. You can see the official yell, get the F out of my face, after he finally threw the flag on whatever Jamar Chase was saying. And the postgame pool report said, I'm not going to repeat it. It was abusive language. Like, I'm not going to get into exactly what he had to say to me. Just know that it was abusive language, okay? I hope that that's enough for you, is pretty much what he's getting at the end of this. For a guy who does as much talking as he did, my stance, I honestly, we deserve some defense in this, because you and I, after Jamar Chase 3 years ago, fried the Chiefs and said, tune in a can, and talked his, and, you know, like we said, he has the right to do it. He is the victor in this situation. He's allowed to come in here and puff out his chest and feel good about himself. Since that moment, he's been held in check by the Chiefs, and it's starting to piss him off. Last night, I swear to God, I could just watch him squirm in that post-game interview 1,000 times in a row. It brought me so much joy. I know Drew is saying I'm obsessed with him. That's
you
not
are.
It. I just
he's one of the
like
best players in the
watching
league.
People squirm in their own bed, their own misery that they made. It had nothing to do with me. I don't have any. Jamar Chase doesn't know who I am. He made this bed and then he had to wear it last night.
I don't think it's an obsession. Like, he's one of the best receivers in football. He made comments this week that said the Bengals are the team to beat, and right now everybody is beating them, so he's correct. They are the team to beat, I guess, in the league.
Other than the Panthers, you know? Same record.
Those are the two teams that they are the team to beat. If you want to win, they are the team that you need to face. That is true. So I guess he was correct. I apologize for my comments last week.
You heard it wrong.
I heard it wrong. That's not what he meant by saying they're the team to beat. And when you get shut down and you talk trash, we know how this works. And that's why Andy Reid was so upset a year or so ago when Justin Reid made comments toward Hayden Hurst or whatever, because they didn't like before the game happening, let the play do the talking kind of thing. And that's basically what Trent McDuffie said. Like, we're not going to say anything extra to him. We're just going to shut him out. And that's what they did. And Jamar Chase couldn't stand that. And that's how it played out yesterday. And Look, Ja'Marr Chase is still going to probably, when the season is over, end up with well over 1,000 yards
sure
and all
will.
That and have a great season. But when in a team against a team that we know he cannot stand, they shut him out. And he also made a huge mistake that was one of the reasons why they lost the game. How it played out, Drew.
To me, if I had picked three things, him doing that was not the reason they lost the game. It was going to be a third down and five, I think is what it was. It was a second down play. He got the ball. It was going to be third and five. They got points. I know it might have ruined the drive, but who's to say the Chiefs don't do the exact same thing? I mean, they got point. Like it's a bad mistake, and he should have never lost his cool. But we just talked about how great the Chiefs defense was in stopping the Bengals offense in the red zone. Who's to say they don't do the same thing and they kick the field goal anyways?
Maybe, but he didn't even give him a chance, man, because he couldn't keep it together. Well,
sure, but I mean they retook the lead. I think that if it would have cost them points and they didn't score at all, that's one that you circle in my mind as a huge play of the game. But the biggest ones to me were the sequence with the scoop and score fumble, the penalty at the end of the game, and then Evan McPherson misses that extra point. And at the moment in time, I thought, man, that I hope it doesn't come back to bite them. And then they end up losing by two, of course. Who knows? Obviously, it's more time. Mahomes knows he needs to get a touchdown if they want to win.
Should have gone for two
there
anyway.
Or just kick the field goal, and you go into overtime. And who knows what happens there. But to me, the Ja'Marr Chase thing, it's easy to point out, but that wasn't even a top three moment as to why the Bengals lost the game.
I mean, 3rd-7 to 3rd-22, when you have a chance to go up two possessions, potentially.
It's not top three, but it's just like you say all the, like he's,
no,
can't help
but
talk, kid acts like a child in post game, has this giant hissy fit on the field. It starts to come off as like huge sour grapes. If you missed the audio, by the way, this is what Ja'Marr Chase sounded like in post game.
How do you leave this one? Look, this is not a moral victories team, but do you leave this one feeling you let one get away?
It doesn't feel great losing.
Can you tell us what happened on your penalty?
I don't know. You got to ask defense. I wasn't on the field.
Oh, no. The one when you got flagged.
I'm talking about it.
Yeah. I feel like there's a go ball on the one to Burton that you might have had a chance to make a play on the opposite side of the field.
Yeah, we had a chance.
How much did this offense build off today?
We came out great. We had a good fight. I couldn't be more proud of the guys today.
How would you describe the Bengals Chiefs the other day? You said it wasn't a rivalry, but it seems like every single game you guys play comes down to the final player
today. It's just good football. Two good quarterbacks playing against each other.
Can I ask, when we play this later, can we put that sad violin music back to it like we did last week?
You and I might have to do that. I don't know if Drew will do that for us.
Can we put that sad? Can we put that sad violin music back below it?
I mean, I think he lie, though? Like the Bengals play great. He's proud of the way that they played. And Mahomes obviously played great. Two great quarterbacks. And he's not going to talk about it because I think he was really convinced it was a hip drop tackle. To me,
it was not, though.
It looked like McDuffie was almost going to do it, but he changed how he tackled him, and it wasn't a hip drop.
And
Ja'Marr was there, and I thought that it was it, and he was vehemently pissed off. And look, in the end, it might have cost them a touchdown, but to me, they still got points, and they took the lead. So if you circle the three biggest plays of the game, I don't think you can circle that one and say, that's the biggest play of the game.
Yeah, I mean, I just think the reason why it gets pointed out more, too, is because when you do talk as much junk as Ja'Marr Chase does, and that's fine, that's his deal,
yeah.
And generally speaking, he backs it up. When you talk smack and you don't back it up and you made a crucial mistake, we can go semantics. You don't think is a top three biggest moment. I do. Top five, whatever. Okay. Of the game. It was
it's
a
not
third
like
and seven.
It was a non-moment.
3rd-22. And then for the guy that loves to talk, then all of a sudden he wants to give one word answers. I mean, I guess I appreciate him answering questions to begin with. He could have just walked out of the locker room. So I guess I'll give him props for that to a certain extent. But it was a player like that should not be making that kind of, that's a rookie type of mistake. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that early on, I guess, in Travis Kelce's career, right, he would get dumb penalties like that. That's the kind of stuff that you hope that Ja'Marr Chase, for someone that wants a long-term contract extension in Cincinnati. I think it is all part of the bigger picture with Ja'Marr Chase. He's frustrated he didn't get the contract he wanted. He's frustrated because the team's
hasn't been the Chiefs in 600 days.
He's frustrated because he can't stand the Chiefs. He's frustrated because he was held under 50 yards. Like, all of it has come together where I'm waiting for the massive blow up, and maybe that was it.
That might have been it. Less than 10 yards against McDuffie, who absolutely shut his ass down.
Yeah, I thought that it was, to me, again, like the loss sucks. But to me, he was more. Jamar was mad that he wasn't able to get open more than anything else in this one. I think that was what it was. You know, it's the contract stuff. I think is he felt like the Bengals did him wrong, which I think that there's some validity to that, and he's just a little bit annoyed at how the season has started again. I think everybody the Bengals should be annoyed at how the season started.
They're 1-11 in the first 2 weeks. Let's talk punishments, though. You know,
we've waited long enough. It's been 45 minutes into the show. We made bets at least a month ago. Initially, we've revised them, but we made a bet a month ago. You were gladly willing to make a bet with us, which we appreciate. For Chiefs and Bengals, you actually told us, I think in like June, you're like, you were counting down this game in June and told us you wanted to make a bet. So we did, yeah. And very quickly
it's because last year Jake Browning wasn't in, and we talked about doing it. Yeah, I wanted to do it.
So we did, and Joe Burrow came to training camp with a new haircut and the bleach blonde hair, all of that, and he said, why don't we make a bet on that where you have to get your hair the same way as Joe Burrow, and you gladly said yes, and here we are. The Chiefs did win. I need to text the person, but I have a owner of a hair salon down in downtown KC that has volunteered to come in studio. This is a professional. Come in studio and live on the air, get you the Burrow look.
Nice.
That's, I think, going to happen this week, hopefully.
So are you going to get a fresh cut before? Or what are you thinking?
Well, yeah. I mean, if I could get the haircut as a part of it, that'd be great, too. But, yeah.
I don't know. I'll ask about that. I don't know if that's a part of it or not.
I'm going to get my haircut, yes, but before getting it. Bleach. I'm not going to do the get it bleached and then cut the hair thing.
You got out of the tattoo. You were initially with Sean Barber. You made an agreement to get the number 59 tattooed on your wrist, which would have been something. You got out of that, in fairness, because Sean Barber's wife felt bad. I also got a follow-up text from Barber on this because I gave him a hard time for letting you out of the bet. And he said, in reality, she didn't really like another man having my number tattooed on him. So it's a win-win. So no tattoo. The McDonald's challenge is still got to happen. That's probably not going to happen this week, though.
No, but that'll probably be in the next
month. I think it's like a weekend thing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's kind of the...
It's going to be a 12-hour challenge where Drew will have to stay at McDonald's for 12 hours. Menu items he eats can knock off time. So like a hash brown could be 15 or 20 minutes off of the 12. You guys get the point. So he can decide how long he wants to be there. Maybe he's fine with just sitting at McDonald's for 12 hours.
Not eating anything.
I don't know.
Let's get a drink and hanging out.
We'll have that on our social media channels when the time comes.
There is, because I thought about it a little bit last time. I was like, well, how do I want to go about this? It took maybe 5 minutes. I was like, well, I'm going to have something to eat to knock off some time, but I can just hang out and I can just...
bring your laptop. You're just going to like watch Netflix.
Yeah, something like that. You know, I'll be all right.
Can you be honest for one second? Because I'll admit, I'm sitting in a press box and I'm thinking, oh, boy. Oh boy, 4th and 16. I'm like, oh boy, this is God. Drew's gonna be interesting. Did you had to have started smirking? When did you think since he was winning that game at some point yesterday?
I did not at one point, I kid you not, think that they were ever going to win the game until on that 4th and 16. Yeah. I was like, one play. Do not mess
sure,
up.
Yeah.
One play. Like,
of course someone messed up. The poverty franchise.
The one thing that I was saying more often than not was take advantage of the opportunity that you have to bury them. Instead, you kick a field goal and it's like a field goal. And it's like, ugh. The biggest thing I felt as soon as Cam Taylor Britt made that interception, I was like, here we go. This is it. Let's go. Couldn't find a way to do it. And then the one play that is very underrated in this is the sack that the Spags blitz that he waited and then it finally came. And like you said, Jamari Connor came through like a bullet and the sack was made. It was tough. It sucked. But
to injury, I'm not kidding. I did not know until 5 minutes ago.
Have you checked our Cody and Gold Guillotine League?
Oh, my team. No, I did. I checked last night. Cody, you're
chopped.
Our team sucked so badly. And I looked and I was like, I'm only on pace to get 40 points. And I was like, I'm done. And then I looked and I saw you were below me. Oh, there's no way that both of us sucked that badly.
I looked first. I lost CMC and now I've lost Pacheco. So my team's completely fried.
Yeah.
So I looked at one point in the middle of the games and it was like, I was on pace for like 48 points. And the next lowest team was you on pace for 63. And I'm like, okay. Well, it was fun while it lasted. I made it 2 whole weeks on Guillotine. Then 5 minutes ago, 10 minutes ago, somebody on Twitch had said, man, Andrew got knocked out of Guillotine. I went, whoa. There's just no possible way that can be true. Drew couldn't have gotten knocked out of Guillotine. my team only scored 49.86 points.
Yeah.
And then sure enough, when I pulled it up, man.
Go back and look at my roster and what they did.
Josh Jacobs fumbled on the 1 yard line. Jamar Chase only got you 7.5 points because of Trent McDuffie. You started Jeff Wilson, and then it turned out that wasn't the right choice because Devin Achane apparently ran for 700. You got zero.
You were locked in, man.
If you got a single catch out of Keon Coleman or Juwan Johnson, he was.
I got two duds. I got two duds. That was really...
With your heart, man. That's a problem. You drafted with your heart, and it backfired. Well,
Tony Bengals.
You were a big Keon Coleman fan around the draft process. You drafted him. We obviously know the Burrow and Jamar Chase picks.
Should have played Yoshi is what I should have done.
Mm. Yeah.
He hit 20 points in guillotine, and then, of course, Kyler Murray... finally decided to throw the ball to Marvin Harrison Jr. and it turned out pretty well for him.
So
that was tough.
Not a great weekend for one Drew Nixon.
Other than that, how was it? You know, other than all of that horrible stuff, how was your weekend? Was your Saturday nice?
Oh yeah, it was good.
You were sick, weren't you, over the weekend?
Saturday is the weirdest thing.
Not a good weekend.
Terrible weekend for Drew.
Friday night, I was totally fine. Woke up in the middle of the night and I felt fine. Went to bed again, got back up. When I got back up on Saturday morning, my wife and I both had body aches, like really bad body aches. Felt exhausted, tired.
Stress. I think a lot of stress heading into the Super Bowl on Sunday. And a lot of stress.
Got the COVID test. Not COVID, obviously, is why I'm here. But I woke up on Sunday and I felt 80%. I feel 100% today. But yeah,
sure you're feeling 100% today? You sure?
Well, he meant physically. Emotionally. Those are different.
Look, to me... The thing that everybody wants to say is how does it feel to be 0-2? Well, the Ravens are 0-2. The division is still wide open.
We call this coping.
This is definitely it'll be fine.
I think there's not a if you're the Panthers, you can't say it'll be fine. The Bengals have been 0-2 before and they went to the AFC title game. The way they looked yesterday, if they keep that same energy, they're going to be in the playoffs.
I think there's still a chance to make the playoffs for sure. I'm just laughing because we're like, well, the last time that they were 0-2, they went to the AFC title game. There's still two teams, and they are one of them, since they've expanded the playoffs, two out of like 30-something that have started 0-2 or something like that, that have actually made the playoffs. Like, we're acting like it's like, no big deal. No, 0-2.
It is a big deal, but I think the way that they looked yesterday is convincing enough to say if that team shows up every week, they're going to the playoffs. This is the Bengals team that was picked to win the division. This is the Bengals team that played in 2021 and 2022. Like, this is what they can be. Because I think, again, Jamar Chase was locked down. That was the big thing is, can they be productive with other guys? Andre Yosef has had a great game. Jermaine Burton had a great game. Like I told you guys, I was like, these are guys you need to watch for, and they made plays.
Yeah, but the Chiefs didn't have a great game. But that's the theory. It was like, if the Bengals play that way, they'll beat most teams. The Chiefs played terribly.
Yeah, they turned the ball over three times.
Correct, but isn't that because of the Bengals?
Somewhat.
I think, as you could say, it was the Chiefs not playing well.
Definitely part of that.
It's always a mixed bag. I'd never say that, like, it's all on one thing holding it down or all on the other, but sure, Bengals definitely made that stuff a little bit more challenging.
I think in, like, Jamar Chase, going back to Jamar Chase's comments real quick before we get a break, that I think was the, like Rob mentioned it on Friday too, that was a, I'm calling on my team, like this is what I'm expecting from my team, and I don't know if Joe Burrow just didn't do that, or I don't know if that was more of an internal thing. But that was like a call to action to me more than anything, is we need to show up and show out and play.
And he had 40 yards.
Like we have some dignity. I mean, Jamar.
And costly penalties. So he didn't show up.
He actually was a net negative in that game. Actively hurt them more than he helped them win that game.
I think there's an aspect of him where I think he'll look back on it and feel bad about that. I mean, Dejon Anthony feels terrible.
He strikes me as a real humble guy that's going to be reflective of his own mistakes. He really strikes me as that kind of player.
I feel bad for Dejon Anthony for having those penalties. Could ask why he wasn't in the game in the first place, but badly timed. It was PI, and at that moment I knew Harrison Butker was going to make it. I was like, they need to block this, because if it gets through, he's going to make the field goal.
He's been the last 2 years. He's the best kicker in football. Not even close.
Justin Tucker has fallen off the planet, hasn't he? He
missed a 56-yarder yesterday. I mean, practically useless now is Justin Tucker.
I did think before. I don't know if it was before they went to punt. I thought Andy was legitimately going to have Harrison Butker try to kick that field goal.
I will say in pregame warm-ups, he was making like 64, 65-yarders in pregame.
Although he was going to try.
Had they tried that 67-yarder, I would have never forgiven Andy for attempting that with 24 seconds left to go and opening up the possibility that since he could have gotten three more points and not gone for it on the one-yard line on fourth down, I'd have never forgave him for that decision.
Because it's an egregiously
bad decision to kick that field goal if you aren't going to go for it on fourth and one from the goal line.
Right. Yeah. And maybe they were just trying to get Cincy to use a timeout. I don't know. But yes, if he didn't kick it, so he's forgiven. If you would have gone for a 68-yard field goal, but not gone for fourth and one at the one, that would have just made zero sense whatsoever. But
first 2 weeks, and I'm annoyed by Andy's conservativeness.
Yeah. For the fans who are blaming the refs, it's never determined by the refs in the end.
Talk to your people in Cincy and in the NFL. Nobody in town here is complaining about the refs. I can promise you that.
And there were plenty of bad calls on both sides.
There were people who were like NFL analysts that were saying that was a bad call. It's like, look, dude, it was a PI.
The Chiefs are the most hated team in the NFL. Any call period, even if it's the right one, it's all for the Chiefs. This is the narrative that has been set, and it's going to be that way. And
maybe I should be
till the end of Mahomes' career.
Maybe I should be feeling worse about the loss, but I'm very encouraged.
You should feel pretty bad.
I'm very encouraged about the way that they looked yesterday, where if they bring that energy, they're going to be in the playoffs, and maybe we'll see these teams play again. I don't know. I hope we do, because that game was a hell of a game yesterday.
It was a great game.
Well, it's a great game. A
lot of fun.
You guys can keep on laughing at me. I'm gonna keep the same stance. I'm surprised that you guys are
coping too hard right now.
It's a tough day to be a Bengals fan.
If you asked me if they started 0-2, do I think they can still make the playoffs in June? I would say yes. I'm telling you how I feel. If you want to call it coping, you can. But I think they can make the playoffs if they bring that energy again. I'm interested to see what the Chiefs do going forward regarding left tackle, Pacheco, and the stuff that they've got real questions too.
I'm interested as well. And that's why we're going to talk about it coming up next. We're late for a break.
Let's talk about the game.
We have been.
Not about Jamar Chase's actions or anything like that post-game.
That's part of the game.
It's part of the game. Okay.
Up next. Not even a third biggest play.
Up next, we're going to talk about the left tackle for the Chiefs who got benched at one point during the game. What does that mean long-term? And are we worried about a future Hall of Famer?